As part of Operation Holiday Salute, Redding Kia would like to express our gratitude to our veterans and those currently serving our country. Since 2006, Redding Kia has striven to be the premier auto dealership in the North State. There's always a military incentive rebate on all new 2025 Kias at Redding Kia. Test drive a 2025 Kia Sorento today. 'Tis the season of new tradition sales events at Redding Kia, 418 East Cypress Avenue, reddingkia.com.
The Ramsey Show.
You actually can help people, and you don't help them by giving them a government program. You help them by showing them the way out. People love me enough to put their arm around me and show me a different way. I didn't figure it all out in my own head. So there's a power to hope. That's not some kind of false panacea positive thinking way. It works. You can't positive think your way into everything, but you can't negative think your way into anything.
Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station. From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
I think that Trump has served as a great president. You know, one slight criticism I have is that he didn't protect his people enough. He didn't protect Mike Flynn enough, and others who went to work for him and believe in his agenda. They did not get the protection they need. I believe that lesson's been learned.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. More at podcast.hillsdale.edu. That was Adam Levinger, Vice President for Strategic Affairs at the Gold Institute for International Strategy, and also the author of the recent book, The Insider Threat: How the Deep State Undermines America from Within. We'll talk in depth with Adam today about that new book, The Insider Threat. Adam, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Scott, for having me. Real pleasure.
Also, former Senior Director for Strategic Assessments with the U.S. National Security Council. So there are insider thoughts from a guy who did serve on the inside. The deep state's right there in the subtitle of the book, Adam, and this is a conversation about the administrative state, the deep state that stretches back, I suppose, nearly a decade in public discourse at this point, but I think it still is helpful for us to define at least what you mean when you say that. What is the deep state? What kind of office holder ends up composing it?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked it, because I do think it's really important, particularly for, you know, those who are talking about the deep state and writing about it and discussing really its character, to not paint the deep state with too broad a brush, because, you know, then, you know, people start thinking that, well, you're just, you know, everything's a deep state. And there are some people who've written books that sort of equate the deep state with the administrative state, and I believe they're very different. So for my book, Scott, I've used a definition that I actually gleaned from the New York Times. And what I call the deep state in my book is a group of civilian and military officials inside the U.S. government who undermine our democracy from within. And so it's genuinely, you know, it's a lawless operation. And frankly, before going into the Trump White House, I didn't think the deep state could exist. I thought that, you know, surely any sort of, you know, conspiracy of rogue individuals who, you know, sought to, you know, weaponize government, that would be checked and balanced by others within the federal government. But I learned over the course of my multi-year sort of battle with this deep state that there genuinely is a, technically a criminal conspiracy, because they are subverting, you know, federal processes intentionally, so it's a crime. Mm-hmm. But that they operate from like sort of key nodes within the national security, intelligence, and law enforcement bureaucracy. So it's by no means is the deep state all of these bureaucracies, but it's certain individuals operating from key nodes to sort of, you know, control processes and weaponize processes. So that's really sort of the way I define the deep state. I think it's as more books come forward, for example, the excellent book by Lee Smith, The Plot Against the President, Mark Moyer's fabulous book, Masters of Corruption, and Ned Ryan's recent book, American Leviathan. I think that there are a lot of us who are seeing the same thing inside these bureaucracies, and it is just, you know, these particular actors are operating from key offices.
Are there particular agencies that you would argue exhibit more compromised conditions than others inside the U.S. government?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, there's a real you know, logic to this. So it's certainly the Department of Defense, and it's also our intelligence agencies, particularly the CIA, but also the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And the reason why is that, you know, if you're going to create a criminal conspiracy inside the federal government to weaponize against your political rivals, you're going to want to really sort of take over key nodes within those agencies, because you have all these tools at your disposal. You have you can go to the FISA courts and, you know, spy on your political enemies, which is what happened, you know, in the 2016 presidential election, and there was a big scandal there. And also, Scott, there's, you know, if you're operating from these national security agencies, you can weaponize these insider threat policies. So you can say, well, I'm going to go after Adam Lovinger or, you know, Mike Flynn or Donald Trump as insider threats because, I'm from the Department of Defense or the intelligence community, and I know that they're insider threats, and I have classified information. And so these more classified secretive agencies, they can also sort of use that cloak of secrecy to cover up their misconduct, to cover up their weaponization of federal process.
Adam Lovinger with us, his new book, The Insider Threat, How the Deep State Undermines America from Within. Donald Trump, his first presidential term, had promised to weed out the deep state and to fight that fight from the Oval Office, from the executive branch. He gets another bite at the apple starting in 2025. What things should be on his agenda? How can the executive branch and the Oval Office fight against the deep state in Washington?
So that's a great question. And President Trump, you know, really has learned quite a bit about the deep state. And I'm very pleased to see that he's unleashed wrote a 10-point sort of memorandum of the various things that, you know, the Trump 47 presidency will address regarding the deep state. And it's called President Trump's Plan to Dismantle the Deep State and Return Power to the American People. And he's really focusing on the right things. One thing in particular, Scott, that I'm very pleased he's looking at are the inspectors general. I mean, the inspectors general, and I would also say the United States Office of Special Counsel, which has as its mandate to protect whistleblowers, has been fully co-opted by the deep state and really to do the opposite of what they were intended to do. The U.S. Office of Special Counsel, the inspectors general, their job is to root out the corruption within these federal bureaucracies and to protect whistleblowers. But they do precisely the opposite of that. They've been totally captured by this lawless bureaucracy. And, you know, just looking at it from a sort of a constitutional perspective, these inspectors general, you know, they're located within these federal executive agencies, and they're supposed to check and balance the very agencies that pay their salaries and pensions. And the founders of the United States, the framers of the U.S. Constitution, would find that arrangement to be absolutely preposterous. And, you know, there may have been a time when these IGs, you know, worked to a certain extent, but I've come across myriad government officials who have had their careers destroyed through lawless processes. They've gone to IGs, and they found that these IGs are just cover-up operations. And it's not me saying that. I mean, there's lots of government oversight entities, for example, the Project on Government Oversight, that issues report after report after report on just all of the abuses of these IGs. And I have to say, you know, the murder of Stephen Luke took place on the DOD IG federal facility. So this was not in a public area. This was in a Department of Defense parking lot where this happened. So I wouldn't be surprised that after the Congress and the Department of Justice do their investigation there, their real investigation of that murder, that they will find that there are IG operatives, you know, who are responsible for killing their colleague. So, you know, that's I think that Trump's on the right path with, you know, dismantling these IGs and, you know, preferably, you know, being true to our constitutional order and transferring that oversight function to Congress where it belongs.
We will continue in a moment with Adam Lovinger. His new book is The Insider Threat, How the Deep State Undermines America from Within. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. 27 years ago, my wife Judy and I started Shasta Gas with the help and under the direction of the Lord Jesus Christ. In fact, we believe He is the owner and we are simply the managers. Through the years, we have received many offers from major national corporations to buy Shasta Gas, but our commitment has always been to be and remain locally owned and family operated. Our daughter Karen Wehunt and her husband Jason now manage the daily operations of Shasta Gas and Shasta Tanks, a new business we started a few years ago. We now have the third generation of family members working in the business. Sunshine Stevens, our granddaughter, and her husband Adam, and our grandson Jason. Our commitment and motto are still the same. Our customers are warm friends. To support locally owned family operated business, please call Shasta Gas Propane at 530-365-3793. That's 530-365-3793.
Are you looking to take your business to the next level? Don't let staffing issues or HR red tape stop you from growing. The most successful businesses are those that have mastered their HR and staffing needs, and they have done it with O2 Employment Services. Finding qualified help is harder and more expensive than ever. HR regulations are getting more and more complex and confusing. For over 20 years, O2 has been providing the foundation successful businesses need to grow, assisting employers with their HR, payroll, workers' comp, benefits and staffing. Partnering with O2 gives you the expertise you need to manage your business and employees. Outsourcing your HR and staffing is no longer a luxury. It's a necessity for successful businesses, and it is more affordable than you think. Let O2 show you how we can help you reduce your HR complexities, hire the right talent, and get back to growing your business. Call O2 today at 530-223-4674 or visit us online at o2es.com.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
Hello, I'm Patrick Jones from Jones's Fort Gun Shop, serving Shasta County for over 50 years. As Christmas and New Year's approaches, we at Jones's Fort would like to thank all of the men and women in the United States Armed Forces. Loyalty, duty, respect, honor, and integrity are just a few things that the U.S. military stands for. Jones's Fort salutes you.
This New Year's Eve, step into the magic and ring in the new year at Redding Garden of Lights. Celebrate 2025 with your loved ones surrounded by 2 million lights, live music from the band Hook, and a special New York-style countdown at 9 p.m., perfect for families with early bedtimes. Enjoy delicious treats, warm drinks, and the spirit of giving as all proceeds support Turtle Bay's animals, exhibits, and educational programs. Don't miss out. Reserve your tickets now at turtlebay.org.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertrand. We've been talking with Adam Levinger. He is the author of the new book, The Insider Threat, How the Deep State Undermines America from Within. Adam, I want to ask about some of the foreign policy implications of things that are discussed throughout the book. Toward the end of the nuclear Iran chapter, you reference President Ronald Reagan's foreign policy and this forward strategy that he had. Would you advocate a return to the Reagan footing on the global stage?
So I do think that America's foreign policy should reflect, you know, the overall interests of the American people. And President Trump has a very distinguished foreign policy record. He did extraordinary things with the Abraham Accords. He took on China in a way that no American president has ever done. And he really deterred Russia. I mean, it's important to note that during Trump 45, there were no wars of significance. And that's because Trump, like Reagan, leads from a position of strength. And America's adversaries fear Trump as they feared Reagan. They certainly did not fear Barack Obama or Joe Biden. In many respects, they thought that they were working for them. And you know, sadly, as I lay out in my book, in many cases, they were working for America's enemies. So I think that, you know, certainly we can't have a return to America being an active world's policeman. That's not why the American people elected Donald Trump the second time. But they did elect him to project strength and to, you know, really, you know, keep the peace through strength. And I guess it's, in some respects, it's a further iteration of Teddy Roosevelt's view, which is you speak softly and you carry a big stick. Trump is certainly about carrying a big stick and, you know, projecting the resolve that we need to deter our enemies.
I did want to ask about that, too, that the big stick, as you reference, or the idea that the U.S. can project strength while still retaining the Trump promises of keeping us out of foreign wars as much as possible. How does that occur in the sense that if there's a military buildup or some sort of show of force, it's going to be an increase in DOD budgets. It's going to mean more contracts with defense contractors. Are they also part of the deep state? Are they involved in this, I guess, web that you outline? And could we trust that to be executed plainly and accurately?
Yeah, no, it's an excellent question. You know, certainly, I mean, one thing that is important to keep in mind is that, you know, really throughout America's history, it's not the U.S. government that's necessarily been making, you know, weapons of war that we've used, but it's the U.S. government contracting with the private sector to produce these things. Mm-hmm. And that can be done properly. There are many examples throughout history that shows that can be done properly. One of the problems, though, is that there's been so much sort of incestuousness. I mean, obviously, Eisenhower talked about the military-industrial complex. Other people talk about the Iron Triangle, which is, you know, the administrative state, you know, dealing with defense contractors and then dealing with members of Congress. And so the defense contractors, you know, contribute to the reelection of members of Congress, and members of Congress allow the administrative state to do whatever they want and to you know, be corrupt. And, you know, that is something that Trump has really shined a spotlight on in a way that I don't think any American president in history has done. I mean, he does talk about draining the swamp. He is very clear about, you know, that this is a very corrupt process. That said, you know, no one wants to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Mm-hmm. You know, America does need to retain its preeminence, its military primacy. And that can be done, but we do need to hold these defense contractors, these contractors accountable. We need to hold the officials that are within the government, the contracting officers that, you know, have been corrupt. You know, I'll tell you, you know, one of the conversations I had with General Mike Flynn soon before he became National Security Advisor is that, when he was at the Defense Intelligence Agency, when he first arrived at DIA to be its director, he asked the DODIG for 10 years of audits of, how the DIA has managed its programs. And not one single audit came back clean, meaning that every single one of them showed extensive fraud, waste, and abuse. And there needs to be some leadership to clean that out. And I do think that, Trump has the will to do that. He needs insiders who know how to do that, who can help him with that. So he has the vital outsider's perspective, unlike so many American presidents who've come into office. He's not a creature of Washington. He hasn't been bought by what I call the deep state, but he's a genuine outsider, even after having already served as president. But I do think that he knows what the problem is, and he needs insiders to help him clean out these audience stables.
Okay, great transition, because my last question for you is on that exact point, which is, you've written this great book, The Insider Threat. You mentioned previously Mark Moyer, who's written a great book called Masters of Corruption. You guys are both on the outside now for various reasons. What needs to be done to attract and then retain the kind of people to be on the inside and work from the inside to root out these problems?
Yeah, so that's actually something I've been thinking a lot about and really working professionally for the past couple of years, and that is to really have sort of a deep state counter strategy. And what I mean by that, the reason why that's so important is that Donald Trump was a whistleblower. He recognized that there was a swamp that needed to be drained. He identified it. Mike Flynn was a whistleblower. He identified that there was a lot of corruption within the IC, and the intelligence community needed to be reformed. I'm a whistleblower. But what happens is that whistleblowers, as most tragically, the case of Stephen Luke shows, really get taken out. And so there needs to be some protection of the people who are going to take on the hard fights, who are going to stand up to corrupt government officials who have been lining the pockets of contractors for years. So there needs to be sort of a protective cocoon, and that needs to really come from the top. I think that Trump has served as a great president. One slight criticism I have is that he didn't protect his people enough. He didn't protect Mike Flynn enough, and others who went to work for him and believe in his agenda, they did not get the protection they need. I believe that lesson's been learned, and that now from the very top of the White House, from the president himself, that he will be protecting his people so that they can go to battle with this lawless criminal enterprise called the deep state.
Adam Levinger is a former senior director for strategic assessments at the U.S. National Security Council, current vice president for strategic affairs at the Gold Institute for International Strategy. And his new book is The Insider Threat: How the Deep State Undermines America from Within. Adam, thank you so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
My pleasure.
Up next, Dr. Timothy McDonald returns. He is director of sacred music here at Hillsdale College. We'll take a look at another beloved Christmas carol, this time Good King Wenceslaus. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Reading Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
We'd like to thank the Reading Rancheria for all their community support, including the bike shop. They do so much for our community, and we're beyond grateful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rancheria. You are the ones we can always count on to help us out in tough times. They're the people that have always been there for us, much more so than anyone else in our community. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Reading Rancheria. Proud to play our part.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Auto Body. You've been in an accident with your vehicle. You call your insurance. The first thing they do is tell you where to go to get an estimate and repairs. Well, tell them where to go and come see us at Coachmaster. They're sending you to their discount repair shop to get the cheapest repair possible. This is not in your best interest. You have the right to choose Coachmaster to do your repairs. All we need is your claim number, and we can handle the entire process. At Coachmaster, we don't repair your vehicle for the insurance company. We repair it for you. We use quality parts and products to ensure the highest quality repairs. Your vehicle will be returned to a pre-loss condition. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Coachmaster Collision Repair continues to be the leader in the North State for advanced technology in the collision repair industry. Remember Coachmaster on East Side Road. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Looking for the freshest top-shelf flower? Look no further than the Queen of Dragons in the city of Shasta Lake, where they work directly with small, local farmers to bring you the finest flower that fits your price. The Queen of Dragons has the best prices on carts, edibles, concentrates, and pre-rolls. Plus, don't miss happy hour every day from 6 p.m. until close and all day Sundays. Don't just stock up on toilet paper. The Queen of Dragons has great deals, so you can stock up on the best flower for the best prices. So what are you waiting for? Stop by Queen of Dragons at 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard or call 530-238-5638 for details or delivery. That's 530-238-5638. And don't forget to follow Queen of Dragons on Facebook and X at the Queen Dragons for all the latest deals and updates. Support Queen of Dragons, a local business in the city of Shasta Lake, where you will find the most friendly and knowledgeable staff. Queen of Dragons at 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard. Visit queenofdragons.com or follow us on X at the Queen Dragons.
If you're tired of artificial intelligence and dishonest news, tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday at 8 a.m.
Join Nick Gardner and Doug Janke, two hosts who were educated at the School of Hard Knocks. Get a layman's view of local government as well as our take on national and world events.
If you're woke, go back to bed. You won't like us. We believe there's a difference between a man and a woman, and I think you probably know what it is.
Tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday, 8 a.m. here on KCNR1460.com, 96.5 FM, and 1460 AM.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Mimi Mosley here from Mosley Family Sellers. We'd just like to thank Redding Rancheria for their generous gift to us. It was so helpful and helped to keep us alive.
Hi, I'm Shelby Mahara with Squishy Doodle Face Painting, and I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Redding Rancheria for all of their support. They always help the community and always help to take care of us when they can.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to find us on X. We're at Hillsdale Radio. We're joined by Dr. Timothy McDonald. He is Associate Professor of Music and Director of Sacred Music here at Hillsdale College. Dr. McDonald, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We continue our walk through a few selected Christmas carols, and today we talk about Good King Wenceslaus. Tell us a bit about the history surrounding this carol and what inspired its composition.
Well, in a way, Good King Wenceslaus is perhaps among the more quirky of the carols that are really part of the standard canon of carols. It's unique because it doesn't tell in any way the story of the coming of Christ or the coming of the Messiah, and yet it still has an absolute attachment to the season, and I think there are a couple of reasons for that, and I think it was sort of engineered by the hymnographer John Mason Neal, who wrote the carol, and it first appears in 1853 in a collection called Carols for Christmastide that John Mason Neal put together with the help of his editor Thomas Helmore, who's also a well-known hymnographer. And it's interesting because it's based on a poem in Czech about the Bohemian Duke Wenceslaus, who lived in the 10th century, around 907 to 935. He didn't live very long. But in his short life, he was known for his tremendous charity as a nobleman, and it was a very difficult life. You know, he eventually is assassinated by his brother, so you can imagine what his circumstances on a regular basis were like. But the hymn itself, it basically paints a narrative. It's a five-verse setting. It's, of course, a poem. All hymns start their lives as poems. And it talks about how Wenceslaus looks out and sees a poor man gathering wood for a modest fire in the cold of winter, and how Wenceslaus, sort of Don Quixote-like, summons his page to begin the project of seeing to the welfare of this, his very poor subject as the Duke, right? And so he summons the page, they gather some food, and they're going to travel through the deep snow on foot to whatever hovel this person lives in. And it's a rather fraught journey, it turns out. And the page is seeking, it's the classic thing where the page is the voice of reason. Like, really, should we continue? The weather's terrible, and I can't find my footsteps. And Wenceslaus says, no, just step where I'm stepping. And, you know, and the page says, oh, the ground is warmed. This isn't the original Czech poem. It's actually really, it's much more elaborate in the Czech poem. And John Mason Neal does a fabulous job of condensing it into verse. And, you know, finally, you get this sort of point where at the end it says, you know, therefore, Christian men, be sure wealth or rank possessing, ye who now will bless the poor shall yourselves find blessing. This is the message of this carol, really. And why is it associated with Christmas? Well, John Mason Neal on his own said that good King Wenceslaus looked out on the Feast of Stephen, which happens to fall on December 26th, the day after Christmas. And so that one ingenious inclusion makes it forever associated with that particular Christmas week. And so I think it's, it's also important to point out that, why would this carol have emerged at this time? So we're thinking about the middle of the 19th century. There are a couple of streams, I think, that influenced this project of Neal's. First of all, you know, at this point in time, you've got this sort of, it's the Victorian era, but it's also the Dickensian era. And so the social gospel becomes, especially with the first and second great awakenings, the developments of a certain evangelical spirit in England, for instance, and certainly, you know, stories like The Christmas Carol by Dickens, there's a real heightening of this aspect of Christian piety. And Neal himself, interestingly enough, worked as his job as an Anglican priest was to be the warden of something called Sackville College, which is basically not a college in our sense like Hillsdale College, but it was a college or a kind of residence for the poor and the indigent. So it was a poorhouse. It was an almshouse, as they call it in England. And so Neal's job was to literally take care of the poorest people in his environs in this Sussex area of Sackville College. And so his own life was kind of wrapped up with this idea of of service.
How would you describe the way the words and the melody come together in this particular carol?
Well, like so many things, it's an accidental conjunction between the words and the music, because the words were cast in verse, and of course that has a certain amount of predictability about it. And so these verses can fit many different melodies, and the melody that Neal found was actually delivered to him by the British ambassador to Sweden in a book called Pie Canciones, which was first published way back in 1582, about 300 years before Neal's time. And it was a wonderful collection of basically medieval melodies and Latin texts that were used in schools in the Swedish-speaking part of Finland. It's interesting. It was a Protestant schoolmaster and a Catholic publisher who kind of worked together to produce this collection. But Neil's copy that he got from the British ambassador to Sweden was the first for that collection to appear. Many interesting tunes, including Gaudete, and several other important Puer Natus Nobis. Are from that collection, and so it was kind of a new collection. The tune that he took was melody to a text called Tempus Adest Floridum, so the season for flowering is upon us. So from that you can gather this is not a winter theme mm-hmm. in the original text for the melody, but in fact it was an Easter springtide carol. And so he borrows this melody, which is very particular. You know, good King Wenceslas looked out. That bop, 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 that repeated melody gives it a sort of a folky character.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a character that is also joyful. And so you hear a little bit of that Easter joy is still kind of embedded in the melody. And so, but it fits perfectly with the tune. I can say that in terms of its... You know, the synchrony between tune and text, I think is really the selection of that tune, which was very purposeful. Sometimes carols are moved around, like for example, O Little Town of Bethlehem. The British sing a completely different melody than the one that we know, which was the original melody. Our melody was the original one because it's an American carol. But this choice on the part of Neil was really quite purposeful, and I think it's a brilliant pairing.
From a compositional perspective, what does make it so unique that perhaps it has hung on all these years?
Well, I think the tune is just the dance-like character of the tune. It's jaunty. It's kind of got a kind of almost you can hear Wenceslas and his page plodding through the snow with those repeated notes, and it's got a kind of a ruggedness about it and a jolliness at the same time. And I think that those two characters of the melody plus the continuous attachment to the story, like what's, mm-hmm. what exactly is happening here. You actually can't really make it out in the first verse. In fact, the first verse is, you know, by itself, which most people probably could sing by heart, is not enough to even get the premise. You really have to go through the story that the hymn is telling you.
Dr. Timothy McDonald, he is Associate Professor of Music and Director of Sacred Music here at Hillsdale College as we discuss Good King Wenceslas. Dr. McDonald, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks for having me.
Up next, Dr. Pat Park returns again. We continue our lengthy conversation, an interesting conversation, into the history of the English language. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Reading Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
We'd like to thank the Reading Rancheria for all their community support, including the bike shop. They do so much for our community, and we're beyond grateful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rancheria. You are the ones we can always count on to help us out in tough times. They're the people that have always been there for us, much more so than anyone else in our community. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Reading Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Hey friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Padron, 60th anniversary. My new personal favorite, starting with an exclusive Perfecto shape. Handcrafted by one master roller, using only the finest tobaccos from Nicaragua. After 60 years of excellence, this cigar is Padron's masterpiece. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends,
and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Hello there, this is Kevin Cry. Every other Sunday, I will be on KCNR, your talk radio, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. I will be discussing the issues that matter to you most. You'll be able to call in directly, ask questions, and have a dialogue open and free every other Sunday right here on KCNR, your talk radio.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Mimi Mosley here from Mosley Family Sellers. We'd just like to thank Redding Rancheria for their generous gift to us. It was so helpful and helped to keep us alive.
Hi, I'm Shelby Mahara with Squishy Doodle Face Painting, and I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Redding Rancheria for all of their support. They always help the community and always help to take care of us when they can.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We're joined by Dr. Pat Bart. She is Associate Professor of English here at Hillsdale College and also a familiar voice on the show as we've been digging through our conversation into the history of the English language. This is part four. You can find all three previous parts in the archive, podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. We left off last time as English was kind of ebbing and flowing into use in various parts of Europe. Dr. Bart, what other languages remained in use as English was starting to gain a foothold?
For well over 200 years, almost 300 years after the Norman conquest, English takes a back seat to Latin, you know, in the church, very much so, as it's the preeminent scholarly language of England. So even if you're not writing about theology, you're still going to write about it in Latin. I mean, this goes on. And so Newton writes his Principia Mathematica in Latin, right? Okay, so Latin has this overall prestige that English had almost sort of begun to come up to. I'm not saying it ever got there, but it was definitely on its way, right? That gets knocked back. And then the language of power and wealth, of course, is the Norman dialect of French for those same almost 300 years. So that era between 1066 and 1350, when an enormous vocabulary of Romance words, whether from Latin or French, it came into tens of thousands of words, came into English, not just, I would say, you know, this sort of famous beef versus pork and, you know, and steer versus swine of the Saxon dogs or whatever, not just those words, but just words that today, in trying to translate something like the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution or the Gettysburg Address into English that does not have Romance influences in it, is not only, it's fun and it's quaint looking, but it's like irritating. It's mm-hmm. really just, oh, come on, give me my French, man. I just want my French back, you know. And this is somebody who doesn't really speak French that well, but right? But it's just the word Constitution itself, right, is from Latin / French, right? You know, so that's how it came in, not entirely from the Norman invasion, but strongly from the Norman invasion.
Talking with Dr. Pat Bart about the history of the English language, the next big event that we need to talk about is the Black Death around 1350. What's the result of all that death?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So in spite of what Monty Python says in the Holy Grail, right, where you've got the bring out your dead or whatever. Okay. So the Black Death actually reached England in 1348. So almost around 1350, right? Not 850 years earlier, which is when King Arthur would be. Mm-hmm. So anyway, many changes resulted from this plague. The death rates in colleges and law courts, which you think, well, law courts, but in both colleges and law courts, The judges and the Oxford and Cambridge dons, they lived in really close proximity to one another, okay? Monasteries as well, decimated in the modern sense of that term, okay? Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. you know, 90% of the people die. Well, can you imagine? May God forbid, but like, what if 90% of us faculty at the college just died, like, within a year or two? Oh, okay, quick, we need a faculty. We also need students, you know? Maybe we'll lower some standards here for a while. I don't know. Okay, so what happened was, for example, a really prime example is that the law courts began to allow pleading in English.
Mm.
Okay, because, you know, maybe all the lawyers are dead, but where's the clerks? But they don't know as much Latin and French. They know some,
sure.
they know a lot, but they don't, and they're allowed to step up because there just aren't any Norman descended people left, right? You're at the top of the pyramid. You know, if 10% of you die, or 20, or 30, or 90% of you die, you know, then that's huge compared to like, well, you know, a lot of us Saxons died, but there's still a whole lot of us left,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that really kind of churned the power structure, it churned the wealth structure, and hence it also churned the language structure of the country. This is the time of Geoffrey Chaucer,
mm-hmm.
and it's often not recognized that his family began to rise to prominence because his branch of the Chaucer family inherited the wealth of everybody who died off in their family. And he and his immediate family happened to be the ones who didn't die from the plague. Okay, so, you know, that really was an important part of his rise to, his father became a vintner instead of a Chaucer is a shoemaker, right? So he's Jeff Shoemaker, actually. And they became vintners, and then that got them in with the king and John of Gaunt, and you know, there's the story, right? The rise, his granddaughter becomes a duchess.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so it's partly due to the Black Death.
Around this time, 13th, 14th century, we see a deterioration in the use of French. Why is that?
Well, as so often, there's more than one reason, right? So the kings of England lost Normandy. They kept fighting over it, but they lost it in 1204. Okay, so 1066, you come crashing over from Normandy, and then that's your duchy, and now you're the kings of England and the dukes of Normandy, and then suddenly you keep calling yourselves the dukes of Normandy, but now somebody else is taking it over. Oopsies. Okay, so you don't go back there as often or as readily, right? And I don't know about you, but, you know, when you visit, if you get to visit a place often where they speak a certain foreign language, it just, you buff it up every
sure.
single time,
yeah.
right? And then if suddenly you just can't go there for 10 years, well, you get kind of rusty. You know, the Dutch are always so proud of how many languages they speak, but good grief. I mean, 10 minutes away, they've got every, whatever. I mean, so and on their TV, it's just, you know, right?
Yeah.
And so that contact, right, became lesser and lesser. And it became a serious vacation trip, if you will, in modern terms, rather than, oh, yeah, I think I'm going to, you know, Paris for the weekend or something. You know, no, it became a really difficult journey where you were considered to be the outsiders,
mm-hmm.
right? We actually find, over the course of several generations, that there begin to be surviving French grammars written in England, English-based, right? So that, you know, grandma speaks perfectly good French, and she just doesn't understand why the grandchildren, what are they speaking this disgusting Saxon dog language, you know? Like, I wish they would stop speaking that in the house. It's just inappropriate, right? And so then the kids get sent off to learn it, and, of course, they hate that. Right. And does this sound familiar? Right. I mean,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it's sort of like having to learn the piano or something. I mean, it's like, why do I have to learn the piano? And if you live somewhere where everybody learned the piano, you might not be as hostile to
right.
it. But these kids are not living where everybody speaks French anymore. Right. It just gradually ebbs. Right. The Black Death also, as mentioned, played an important role. Then there was also the Hundred Years' War.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is where the English are trying to get France back. I mean, at the height of it, the English kings not only were the Dukes of Normandy, but the Aquitaine, and I mean, a whole bunch of central and southern France was under their sway through marriage, right? So they're trying to get it back, and Henry V is spectacularly successful. I mean, he gets named the heir apparent to the French throne because he kind of whacked him real hard, you know? But in the course of this, I mean, you almost think, oh, see, all right, now that this has happened, these Normans, they're all going to get uppity again. They're all going to start speaking French again. They're all going to hang around in France. But no, the thing that happened was that the French were seen as the enemy, you see. And Henry V famously relied on his English bowmen, the longbowmen, right, to win those battles. And so it had just become, you know, we English. And we English own France, man, you know, but we own it as English, you know. And so by that time, Henry V actually asserts his power, not by speaking French to the French king and having the treaty in French translated into Latin so everybody else knows it, but he starts using English as a diplomatic language. Right. So, so that's another important move there, right? Law courts locally, but then English asserting itself as a diplomatic language, and it wouldn't really become fully a diplomatic language. I mean, even in my youth, French was still, you know, very much the diplomatic language, but people got real in the course of the 20th century, and English became the diplomatic language, right? So, because more and more people just knew it.
Right.
And like, do we have to learn French? I'm going crazy. I don't want to learn an extra one. Right?
Dr. Pat Bart, back for one more visit, part 5 of our History of the English Language, next time we chat. That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Adam Lovinger, Tim McDonald, and Pat Bart. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Reading businesses, listen up. Black Bear Diner is now offering catering for events, meetings, and gatherings. Fuel your team with our delicious homestyle meals that everyone will love. Ready to make your next event a hit? Visit blackbeardiner.com for more information and place your order. Black Bear Diner, your go-to for great food and good times.
Black Bear Diner.
At Greg's Pump and Well Service, we believe integrity is the cornerstone of everything we do. This month, we proudly salute our armed forces and first responders, those who embody true service, dedication, and integrity. When you choose us for your pump and well needs, you're choosing a company that shares those same values. Thank you for your service. Let us serve you with pride. 530-282-5395. Call us at 530-282-5395, license 109-0355.
Happy holidays from our Home Helpers family to yours. At Home Helpers, we are proud to help your loved ones celebrate this holiday season from the safety and comfort of their own homes. We are equally proud of the men and women who can't be with us. To the bravest among us, far from home serving our country this holiday season, to all members of the military in all branches, past and present, and those who made the ultimate sacrifice, with respect, gratitude, and love, we thank you. Happy holidays from all of us at Home Helpers. Life takes you to unexpected places. Love brings you home.
KCNR invites you to join us the second Friday of the month, starting at 8 a.m., for the Gorman Law Hour, featuring local attorney Patrick Gorman, a legal expert when it comes to injured workers, compensation claims, and employee claims. So, if you have a legal question or just wonder whether or not you have a legal issue or problem, talk to Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, during the Gorman Law Hour, starting at 8 a.m. the second Friday of the month on KCNR.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
Ed Robertson inviting you to join us for the next edition of TV Confidential, Saturday morning at 11 on KCNR. Bill Grace will join us for our annual look at vintage New Year's Eve specials hosted by Guy Lombardo. That's TV Confidential, Saturday morning at 11 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, KCNR.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.